Hi, from Beyond the Beltway, this is Bruce Dumont with our weekly analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by traditional Republican Arlen Gould, pro-Trump Republican and conservative leader Jeannie Ives, Patrick Fingston of Illinois.com, and a little bit later on in the program, hour number two, we'll be talking about the passing of Queen Elizabeth and also offering our reflections on September 11th. Nice to have you with us this evening. In hour number one, wherever you're listening, I think probably most of the people that are listening to this program, wherever you're, whether you're a listener or a viewer, you are probably a Republican. So tonight, in hour number one, we're going to talk about the future of the Republican Party. Because a lot of people would like to fall in behind Donald Trump and march him back to the White House again. And a lot of other people would like to march him someplace else. They certainly don't want him in the leadership of the Republican Party. But that is where we are at the moment. It's one of the, I would say, probably the pivotal question of not only this midterm election, but it certainly is the pivotal question to ask between now and 2024, as well as what happens to Joe Biden. But that will be a different program. So tonight we have three Republicans of varying stripes with us, and I want to begin by getting each of them to sort of weigh in on where they are. And Patrick Fingston, I want to start with you. You have described yourself as sort of a backward Republican. You're in the media business now, but once upon a time you described yourself as a strong Republican. So my question to you is, when we talk about Donald Trump, is there anything about Donald Trump's policies that make you sick, or is it just his personality?
First of all, Bruce, thank you for having me. Second of all, I've worked Republican campaigns in numerous forms from 2012 through 2020. So it's not like I don't have any conservative bona fides and still consider myself conservative. Yeah. And there are things that you can say that happened during the Trump administration that were good, and a lot of them were thanks to Mitch McConnell, especially if you want to say thank you for the conservative judges. The issue with Donald Trump is twofold. One, it's the personal aspect that he is below the dignity of President of the United States. He is below the dignity of a guy that should be treated with any sort of respect. And two, the way he handled himself in office was solely transactional. There was no basis of belief. There was no moral compass behind what he stood for. It was, what is good for me today?
Okay. Jeannie Ives, you have been a guest on this program for many, many years. You've run for governor of Illinois. You challenged an incumbent governor and ran a very strong race, although you finished second in a two-person race, and you run for Congress. But you're probably the first lady of conservative politics in Illinois, at least at this moment in time. Your answer to the same question. Is it Trump's policies that you like the most, or is it the man?
How can you not like some of Trump's policies? And I'm going to put a little caveat here, because when COVID hit, one of the worst things that he did was not fire Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx right away. The fact that they got a lead and a complete shutdown of the economy for months after month after month really damaged, I think, in the end, his sort of reputation. He also had some other personal issues. Comey should have been out from the get-go as well. I mean, and personnel becomes policy. That's kind of where he failed. On the other stuff, look, who can argue? Who can sit in this room and argue that he does not have a philosophy, that he isn't transactional? Who else gets up there and speaks relentlessly about American first? America first. America first. I mean,
America,
that's his
first
mantra.
Equals Trump first.
1 second.
No, it doesn't. Are you talking about massive illegal immigration, 2 million people walking across the border under Biden, and everybody else is okay with that? He understood very first about American energy independence, American security in all realms. America first.
Our third Republican is Arlen Gould. Arlen, you're not a big fan of Donald Trump.
I am not railed
against him for a long time.
I have.
But is it Donald Trump the man, or is it his policies that really tick you off?
Well, it's the man. But let me just say this: I've had an opportunity to also to run
speak a little bit louder, if you will,
Republican campaigns.
Yeah.
Over the years, for state rep, I consider myself the kid on the block who's now at the table with one of the state leaders. And so I'm happy to be here, and I appreciate being here, Bruce. Mm-hmm. To me, this is all about one word, democracy. Donald Trump has no need for democracy. Donald Trump does not respect democracy. Donald Trump has tried to overturn an election single-handedly that would be the end of the democracy.
What does it say? What does it say, Arlen? You're going to get the first follow-up. What does it say about 70 million people who voted for him? Many of those 70 million still probably cheer him. Not all. What does it say about them and the way that President Biden has attacked them for their extremist and semi-fascist views?
Right. I wouldn't go there. I don't think that tarring everybody with the same brush makes any sense. I don't think that the president's statements did him any good, because he really needs to attract Republican votes to win. So there is a part of the party that's very Donald Trump, that believes he's doing the right thing. That's their decision, but an awful lot of people don't believe that.
Okay. Patrick, you were making a point earlier. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, you mentioned the Biden speech, and let's be clear, that was a campaign speech in campaign season, even if they tried to disguise it as an official speech. Mm-hmm. So if you think he was talking to anyone other than potential Democratic voters, you're kidding yourself. The idea, and I certainly respect the conservative ideals that Representative Ives brings to the table, but I disagree in the sense that Donald Trump is the voice of the working class. He's anything but the voice of the working class. He's the voice of himself and only himself, and that's all he's ever cared about.
Agree. How come so many in the working class seem to disagree with you on that?
That's a really great question that I haven't found the answer to.
That's because it's not true. It's not true.
It's a cult of personality, essentially.
100% not true. You have now more Hispanic Republican voters in Democrat Miami-Dade than ever before. That is part of the Trump legacy, even as it is part of DeSantis, who has, you know, taken on and fully embraced Trump ideals of America first. And so that is what you see here. You've had one congressional seat after another in Texas that used to be blue, now go to red, and that is a result of what the leadership from Donald Trump. Now, he was not a perfect leader. I'm telling you that. I agree. But he has done a whole lot in bringing to the forefront the idea that America needs to be first and foremost in our minds.
Any of those people, African Americans and Hispanics.
Yes.
And again, all the polls and all the narrative is that they're, you know, the support they're giving Trump in the past and maybe in the future is one of the big political stories out there in the body politic. My question to you is, what do you think their answer is to the question that I asked? Is it the machismo? Is it the show business aspect of Donald Trump? Or is it his policies? What turns them on?
It's somebody who's a straight talker to them and speaks at their level. That's what turns them on. And the fact that he talks about people want to have pride in their country. And Donald Trump, more than anything else, had pride in America. And they actually understood his policies. They did better under Trump with his tax cuts, with his job development, with his emphasis on energy independence. They did better under Trump.
I want to come back and follow up on speaks at their level. I want to come back and get everybody's reaction to what does that mean. I'm Bruce Dumont. Don't go away tonight.
At Jersey Mike's, you can elevate any sub by getting the juice. Red wine, vinegar, and an olive oil blend. It's how a Jersey Mike's sub gets its exquisite zing and how bites get boosted. The juice adds a certain something extra, an exclamation on top of the freshly sliced meats and toppings, the kind of exclamation you can eat. Order Jersey Mike's subs on our mobile app and get delivery right to your home or pick up from your nearest Jersey Mike's sub location. Jersey Mike's, be a sub above.
Going back to school as a working adult doesn't mean you have to sacrifice a high-quality education. Purdue University, a top 10 public university, took its innovative thinking to a new level when it created Purdue University Global for working adults. Discover innovative, practical ways to earn your degree online and advance your career. Purdue Global has already awarded more than 1 million credits for prior learning, which means you can save nearly half the cost of your bachelor's. See how close you are to finishing your degree at purdueglobal.edu. That's purdueglobal.edu.
It's a bully, but we aren't afraid of a fight. It's elusive, But our focus never fades. It's deadly, but we were born to defeat cancer. You may not have heard of us, but our work has helped millions impacted by cancer. We are the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. We are leaders in advancing breakthroughs in immunotherapy, genomics, and personalized medicine. This research saves lives. After 65 years of fighting blood cancers, we've arrived at a game-changing belief. The cures for cancer are in our blood. The drugs and treatments we've developed for blood cancers have helped people affected by many different types of cancers. We are the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Beating cancer is in our blood. Learn more at LLS.org. If you're talking,
they will hear you. We all want our kids to grow up safe and healthy. So we show them how. And we tell them with honest conversations that let them know what we expect. Not just one time, but every chance we get. That's especially important when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. Kids not only need to know the dangers and how to avoid them, they need to hear it often from you. And when it comes to pain medications, opioids, they need to know that they should never be taken without a prescription and never shared with friends or family. It's dangerous and illegal. So talk with your kids and guide them through the challenges of growing up safe and healthy. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. So talk, they hear you. You can do it if you try.
Bruce Dumont back, and Jeannie, you mentioned Donald Trump speaking to their level. Elaborate a little bit more on what you meant by that, and I want to get the other guest's response to it. Is he talking down to them? Is he talking to blacks and Hispanics in a different manner?
No, he's talking to them about issues that concern them. Okay, not the whole diversity, equity, inclusion stuff. You really think the privates in the Army want to hear that crap? No, they don't. I'm telling you right now. And neither do the majors, and neither do the colonels or the lieutenants or any of them. They don't want to hear that crap. And he wouldn't take it. He was not going to take any of that. They didn't want to hear about student loan bailouts or anything like that that you hear from the Democrat side. He spoke plainly to the people, like, we're going to put Americans back to work. We're going to protect America when we're out there. We're going to kill our enemies like he did al-Baghdadi and the others. We're going to go after them. We're going to make Americans the priority. That is not speaking down to them. That is speaking real to them.
Patrick,
he was also speaking out of both sides of his mouth.
Oh, in what way?
I mean, he's the guy that said we're going to repeal and replace Obamacare, though didn't have a plan. And two, also
John
said
McCain.
In an interview, also said in an interview with 60 Minutes that he wanted health care for everybody. So he was both for repealing Obamacare and having universal health care at the same time. He was for erasing the national debt or reducing the national debt, then was behind a tax cut bill that vastly grew the rate of debt in this our national debt, which Republicans magically flipped on, where, you know, I was in congressional offices before the Trump administration when you had debt clocks on the wall, and then they were happy to raise it even more when they couldn't pay for their taxes.
That needs a little bit of a correction.
What does that say for Republicans? And again, you used to, you know, work and try to get Republicans elected. My question to you is, what does it say for them that they weren't really upset with Trump when he was president? They weren't pushing him on a lot of these things that are important to you. The headset will work better if you put it over the top of your
head. This hair is very pretty.
It is, but you know what? Throw the headset.
It's essentially, I think we've seen the cowardice of Republican politicians over the last 5 or 6 years now.
Does everybody agree with that?
Well, I'm not a coward.
Absolutely.
Okay, go ahead. You hit a chord. You brought everybody together, Patrick. Go ahead.
The reality was that most of the members of the House and Senate Republican conference knew Trump was full of BS.
Yeah, they did.
And were unwilling and unafraid to stand, or were unwilling and completely afraid to stand up to it, because they knew the mob would come a-calling.
That needs some factual correction. First of all, after the Trump Tax Cuts and Job Act that went through in 2017, revenue actually increased. The problem is you had Nancy Pelosi in charge of the Congress, and they increased spending. If anybody remembers here, Pelosi exploded the budget, and Trump tried to have that fight, shut down the government. Everybody went ballistic, including the Republicans who wouldn't stand by him. And then what happened? The budget explodes because he had no control over the spending issues, but the revenue did come in. That actually did create additional revenue, including all of the revenue that came out back from the foreign countries that was being hidden offshore by our large corporations who didn't want to take huge tax hits on their money over there.
I want to jump in on two things that we started. One was the Hispanic support for the party. And I will tell you, when Dick Oglesby was governor and I ran the Hispanic campaign
for In Illinois.
1968. Correct. In his reelection bid.
72. 50 years ago.
We won 24% of the Hispanic vote in Illinois. I don't think Donald Trump has gotten any better than that now. So I don't believe we're doing that much better than we did then. That's my first point.
It's
actually
Illinois.
I looked it up,
Illinois.
The break. So Trump got 38% of Hispanics in 2020. George W. Bush got 44% of Hispanics in 2004. So the number's down from Bush levels.
Okay.
For what? For overall or for Illinois?
Nationally.
Well, okay. We'll see.
Let's go to John in McHenry, Illinois. He's got a question, wants to chime in. Go ahead, John. You're on Beyond the Beltway.
Yes, just from an Hispanics perspective, one reason that we like Trump is because he projects and is strength. We like strong people, men or women. Look at some of the congressional races this fall on the Texas border. You've got Congresswoman Mayra Flores. She flipped the district. You've got Cassandra Garcia. You've got Monica de la Cruz, who could very well flip seats, and other frontline seats that are not overly that have outstanding nominees, and they're all inspired by the strength of Donald Trump. But more importantly, Donald Trump allowed for God, family, and country. And that's what Flores is running on. That's what all the three of the South Texas ladies are running on, because it's heartfelt. It's
John,
genuine.
John, yeah. Let me ask you a question. In the people that you work with, or your neighbors, how many of those people are like at least a couple of our guests this evening, they're not Trump fans. They want to be Republicans, but they're moving away from the Republican Party just because the party has, a stench of Donald Trump. In your personal sphere of influence, are there many people like that?
I can tell myself personally and my neighbors, I've moved away from the Republican Party.
You have,
but I'm
okay.
Still a conservative, and I put God first, family and country in that order. And that is what being a genuine patriot is. God and country in that order, and that's how President Trump was received. And yes, COVID came up. Yes, he wasn't perfect. Nobody is perfect. We know that. Scripture teaches that. But that's why there are so many candidates inspired, and yes, there are some Trump wannabes that are phonies. We have to discern that, but definitely keep an eye on those three South Texas races. You know,
Who were the Trump phonies in your view, John?
Well, running this year, we have one here in Illinois who just took down their position on abortion. That's a phony, because they ran in the primary saying that they're pro-life, and then they completely stripped their website of that reference, and they took down all their YouTube videos. And that's
Who is that?
That was Illinois' 11th District's Catalina Lauf.
Okay.
She took down all her abortion planks. So that's just one instance. But someone like Mayra Flores.
Okay. You've made your pitch for Mayra Flores. Thank you very much. We appreciate your report from McHenry, Illinois, on South Texas politics. We appreciate it. Arlen,
I have a question for Jeannie.
Okay.
Is Mr. Biden the duly elected president of the United States?
Yes, he is.
Thank you.
Do you have a problem with that? But that doesn't mean...
Let me finish. Let somebody finish a sentence. The point is, as we all know, Donald Trump today still claims, and incorrectly so, that he's the president. And last week, after Mr. Biden gave that speech, he got up and said, I should be installed today as president of the United States. What he is, let me, can
okay.
I finish
yeah,
the statement? Yeah,
absolutely, you can.
So what he is doing is disintegrating democracy in this country. And I'll keep going back to that because it is the core issue. It's his personality, the way he treats people, the way he denigrates people, the way he lies about elections.
How about, let me just offer one other assessment, and then Jeannie's got to jump in. How about we explain it as he's just a narcissist? He's just... Just a minute. Let me finish.
He's just
an egomaniac. He's not the only. He's not the first. He's not the last egomaniac that's going to be president of the United States. But, you know, in his mind, and by the way, psychologically, I don't think he has the capacity psychologically to admit that he lost. I really don't.
I think you're right.
Okay. But the question is, why is it that 70-plus million people, give or take a million,
I can answer that.
Still believe...
Well, we don't know.
And his definition. And by the way, if there's anybody at this table who knows about corrupt elections, it's the two of us because we come out of
Absolutely.
Cook County, Illinois.
Cook County,
that's and
correct.
You know corrupt elections.
I can tell stories.
Okay. So
right.
The question is, how much of that is just it's a personal trait that's very wrong. Nobody should support it. But that's the definition of who he is.
When that trait prevents you from seeing things other than through your wounded eyes, it's not a place for a president. And that's what he does. One of his key attorneys yesterday, in a release statement said that he doesn't believe he can ever get away from seeing the world through his wounded eyes and making decisions based on his own hurt.
Well, I'll tell you what. There was 100% election irregularities. There was 100%. 100%.
You want to document that?
Yes, absolutely. Because I documented in a court case in the state of Illinois. They proved it to be moot after the fact, but I'm telling you right now, they changed state election law. In Illinois, Pennsylvania, and elsewhere, they changed state election law outside of the state legislature, which is unconstitutional. And in Illinois, I'm telling you what happened in 2020. You want to argue that it wasn't that Donald Trump thinks that he was wrong in that election? He was 100% wrong, as we figured out in
100%.
Wisconsin already. In Wisconsin, they already figured that out, all right?
They did.
In Illinois, we know that they changed state election
law.
Wall Street I know
Journal
that they did.
Told Wisconsin
okay,
to
does that
up.
Mean that Biden's not president? Biden's president. Obviously, he's sitting there in the White House. But that doesn't mean that the election
But you're still
was
arguing that
wrong.
It was
okay,
I want to go,
sorry,
one second. I want to let Patrick weigh in. Patrick?
The 2020 election, by its nature, was irregular. And that was because of COVID. That was because so many states changed their election laws for the fact of making it easier for people to get their ballot in. That in itself isn't corrupt.
Right.
That in itself is irregular. But most, whether you dropped your ballot off at the local library like I ended up doing that year, or you mailed it in, or you went to the poll, the votes were counted the same way they're counted in every single election.
Correct. 50 court cases. Nationally, 50 court cases.
64,
including the Supreme Court. That is how we question elections in the courts. Okay. And none of them won. Not one single case did Donald Trump win. Not one.
We're going to be back. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight on Beyond the Beltway.
Goodbye, bench press. Adios, squat rack. Fare thee well, kettlebell.
Hey, Kellen, need a spot?
No, Jake from State Farm. I'm just saying goodbye to my pricey gym membership.
What? Don't give up what you love. State Farm has options like insuring your home and ride with great rates on both.
Nice. Hey, can I buy you a protein shake or a granola bar?
For surprisingly great rates, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Call or go to statefarm.com for a quote today.
Going back to school as a working adult doesn't mean you have to sacrifice a high-quality education. Purdue University, a top 10 public university, took its innovative thinking to a new level when it created Purdue University Global for working adults. Discover innovative, practical ways to earn your degree online and advance your career. Purdue Global has already awarded more than 1 million credits for prior learning, which means you can save nearly half the cost of your bachelor's. See how close you are to finishing your degree at purdueglobal.edu. That's purdueglobal.edu.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for kids, teens, or young adults. It's just not.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals and volatile organic compounds into your body.
And nicotine, the same highly addictive substance found in regular cigarettes.
Nicotine can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
Affecting learning, memory, attention, and impulse control. And priming the brain for other addictions.
Vaping products also come in kid-friendly flavors that can make them appealing to youth.
And many kids also use other drugs, like marijuana, in vaping devices.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media,
many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping, because when you talk, they hear you.
For more information, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Bruce Dumont back. Nice to have you with us. And by the way, this is September 11th, 21 years ago. America was shattered out of its peaceful existence. And we will be discussing that in hour number two, as well as the passing of Queen Elizabeth. But tonight we're talking about the future of the Republican Party. And we have three Republicans with us to varying degrees. Patrick is still giving me his eyes raised up. I want each of our guests to briefly explain, give me a little biographical background. Just about 20 seconds, Patrick.
Yeah, my name is Patrick Fingston. I'm a farm kid from nowhere, Illinois, turned who was a journalist initially, turned a political guy for about 10 years, and write a political newsletter now that's Illinois-focused called TheIllinois.com with a Z.
Okay. Jeannie Ives.
Yep, I'm Jeannie Ives. I'm a West Point graduate, served in the Army, mother of five, and I ran for state rep, served 6 years under, I think, some of the most contentious time, ran for governor and also Congress.
Okay.
So Arlen Gould, I actually, believe it or not, started working in a Republican campaign for alderman in Chicago, 1966 or 7 when I was still in high school. Yeah. From there, got hired by Dick Ogilvy in education, worked for one of the really great governors of Illinois, and after that, moved out to the suburbs, have ran about 10 campaigns, Republican campaigns for state rep, worked with closely with Mark Kirk and Bob Dole and a whole host of other Republicans who I consider among the good guys.
And to be completely candid, we've known each other for over 50 years.
We sure have.
I think you helped in my campaign.
I did. We met when I started with Ogilvy, and you were a Cub reporter.
Yes, I was, and I was a Cub candidate too.
Yeah.
Let's go to Mark in Carmel, California, one of the most beautiful cities in America. Mark, nice to have you with us this evening. Go ahead.
Good evening, Bruce. Thanks so much, and I hope you had a nice week off last week.
I did, and my thanks to Eric Cohn for doing a wonderful job and sitting in for me last week.
As he did. Hey, so I'm glad to have three conservatives on the table tonight, and thank you, Jeannie, because in my opinion, you're the only true conservative there, because, frankly, I have one question to ask all three of you.
Okay.
Given that most elections are a binary choice, you pick one or the other. What would all three of you choose? Start with in any order you'd like. We're giving a binary choice between a Republican and a Democrat on any ticket in America. What would you choose?
Any ticket. Okay, not just president. Okay, that may be a little bit tougher than usual. Arlen Gould?
Well, I still have to take character into the discussion, and I just can't blindly vote for somebody. I've voted for Republicans my whole life. I've voted for Republican presidents my whole life. I've voted for
only
state reps.
Republican presidents?
Only Republicans up until now. And even, well, with Donald Trump, I chose not to vote, to be candid.
Didn't vote at all. Okay.
Right. But I could not accept somebody who I believe is a criminal, okay, and just because they're a Republican, vote for them.
Okay. There's your answer. Let's go to Patrick and get your answer.
What I'll say is that I voted for Republicans for president in 2004, 2008, 2012, and undervoted for president in 2016 and 2020. I've only voted for Republicans for governor, Congress, U.S. Senate in my life, with the exception of 2018 when living in Indiana. I voted for Joe Donnelly for Senate.
Jeannie Ives.
I've been a Republican since I was a teenage Republican growing up in South Dakota. So I've only voted for Republicans, and that's because if you look at the Democrat Party, they actually wanted to take, you know, God out of the pledge. That's who these people are. They are the biggest pro-abort socialist party at this time. And, you know, the idea that you would not vote for Trump and you would not, would even consider Hillary, who truly is corrupt,
outstanding. What Mark also talked about other campaigns.
Okay, I don't
know. Or U.S. Senate, Congress. I mean, is it possible that you could vote for someone?
I'll tell you what. It is a nonpartisan race, but I tell you what, the right guy for mayor of Chicago in 2023 is Paul Vallis, and he's a Democrat, but he is the right guy.
Okay.
He is qualified and he's principled.
Okay. And let me just offer.
Okay, you did the roundabout. Am I still there?
Yes.
You're still there, right? And I was gonna
okay,
give.
So let me do a follow up question, because frankly, are any of you three, again, very happy with the direction of our country under Joe Biden, with all of the current administration goals, the big push to towards renewable energies and outlawing gas fueled vehicles have you, and the open border policies that are going on? And those are the reasons that I ask. It's a rather binary choice.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's
we can go in
right.
one direction, or we can go in another direction. Okay. And frankly,
exactly right.
We were thriving in 2018.
Mark, I'm going to ask two of our three guests, because I think I know where Jeannie's coming from. Arlen, what's your answer?
My answer is I don't know who the candidate is today for president, and so I can't.
No, he asked about Joe Biden.
I think
Joe Biden.
On some levels, he brought NATO back together. He has supported Ukraine. He's also passed the infrastructure bill that Donald Trump wanted to pass but was not able to pass. Okay. So he's done some positive things.
And you want to continue to fund
if the choice is binary between him and Donald Trump, who I believe is a criminal, it would have to be but Joe Biden.
Well, his question was just about Joe Biden.
I had high hopes for a Biden administration because I think he is, above all, a good man. His presidency has been a disaster. In all forms, both domestically and internationally, and I'm very disappointed by the tone and the direction of the Biden administration. And it's clear that Congress and his staff have driven a center-left guy way left.
Okay, you said he's a good man.
I do believe that.
Has there been any doubt in your mind? Because you know what, I used to believe that. I believed that during the campaign, that Joe Biden generally was, you know, he was usually okay. I mean, in the last 50 years that I've been covering politics. But you know what? That speech in Philadelphia, that changed everything for me. And it wasn't even before Philadelphia. I think Joe Biden is a pretty nice guy. But anyone who can stand and give that speech in Philadelphia is not a good man, because he doesn't really care about bringing the people of this country together. It is the most divisive speech ever given by a president of the United States. And I have lost all respect for Joe Biden just because of that speech.
I think the speech was wrong.
It was horrible.
And no matter what he said, let's talk about the Marines at the door first. I mean, the military is supposed to be apolitical, so positioning Marines in uniform behind him was completely improper. It's wrong when Democrats do it. It's wrong when Republicans do it.
Agreed.
Plenty of people in the White House should have known better.
Yes, but they don't.
But there are a lot of things you can say about today's Republican Party. And I don't think, but I don't think the majority of Republicans are fascist or semi-fascist or whatever term he used. You know, there was no state management of the economy under Trump. There was no, you know, he didn't try to make himself permanent president. He just tried to steal a second term. He never tried to establish a single party dictatorship. Mostly what he did were just silly, stupid public remarks. That doesn't make you a fascist. It just makes you a bad president.
By the way, you know, if you're a regular listener to this program, you know that I am not a big fan of Chuck Todd, and I'm not a big fan of Meet the Press. But today, Chuck Todd's guest was the Vice President of the United States. If you didn't see the program, look it up on YouTube and watch it. It is a startling example of why Kamala Harris shouldn't be Vice President, let alone President. She couldn't identify what a semi-fascist was, but it is her answer to virtually every question is this is a poster child for someone who should never be near the presidency of the United States. Do me a favor. Look it up on YouTube. Watch it. We'll talk about it next week. Let's go to Joy in Spokane, Washington. Go ahead, Joy.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi. I have a couple of different takes on Trump, because I've been so puzzled why he had the support he did. So I think I mentioned maybe about 6 years ago I started listening to right-leaning radio shows here, uh-huh. where I've always been a Democrat. And what I find is those on the radio and from Trump who are still supportive of him, just, I don't know, a lot of it I would define as just the base, appealing to the baser part of our country. I find that a lot of their, even the language they use and the names they call Democrats and such, and then also just the way that Trump would refer to immigrants. I just came from a week in Guatemala. I would describe those people, you know, they don't compare at all the names and the terms that Biden would use. Predominantly black football players are SOBs. I mean, continually he used this language that
who,
I...
Who were you talking about?
Trump.
Who did he call an SOB?
I think she's referring to the Kaepernick situation.
Yeah, the Kaepernick situation. Okay. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
But he called them all. He said they should those
no, he
those
didn't call
SOBs them. Should all be kicked off the
Those that kneeled.
He right. believed he referred to them right in a blanket way. Okay? That is a sin he's committed. In your view.
But anyway, I just felt like he talks down about people. I mean, continually, I think he talks about people in very hateful ways. But the other thing is that I think he's playing a continuous game. I read somewhere that before he even was president, he had like 3,500 lawsuits. And he plays this game, and he did throughout the presidency. He pushes throughout the gray areas to the black, and if it's, you know, if he's illegal, then they will say he's illegal. But he's pushing the whole time.
We're going to find out because we're out of time for the segment. Back shortly. I'm Bruce Dumont. Don't go away.
Going back to school as a working adult doesn't mean you have to sacrifice a high-quality education. Purdue University, a top 10 public university, took its innovative thinking to a new level when it created Purdue University Global for working adults. Discover innovative, practical ways to earn your degree online and advance your career. Purdue Global has already awarded more than 1 million credits for prior learning, which means you can save nearly half the cost of your bachelor's. See how close you are to finishing your degree at purdueglobal.edu. That's purdueglobal.edu.
At Jersey Mike's, you can elevate any sub by getting the juice. Red wine, vinegar, and an olive oil blend. It's how a Jersey Mike's sub gets its exquisite zing and how bites get boosted. The juice adds a certain something extra, an exclamation on top of the freshly sliced meats and toppings, the kind of exclamation you can eat. Order Jersey Mike's subs on our mobile app and get delivery right to your home or pick up from your nearest Jersey Mike's sub location.
Jersey Mike's. Be a sub above.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
I'll be here to hear what's on your mind.
Kids want to share what's going on in their lives with the adults around them. Parents, grandparents, teachers, coaches, and more. They want to know you're listening, and they want to listen to you. They want your input and guidance, early and often, on all kinds of topics. When it comes to a serious subject like underage drinking, they want to know your expectations, as well as how and why, as a young person, they should avoid alcohol. How you talk about it will change as your child grows, but the important thing is to talk about it. Not just once for an hour when you think the time is right, but in 60 one-minute conversations and more that are part of your everyday talks. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
When you need me, I'll be by your side.
That was in 22 years ago. Bruce Dumont back, and we're talking about the future of the Republican Party. And my question to you, and I'll start with you, Patrick, where does the party go now, given the lay of the land? It looks like all but I think two primaries have been held in the country. But in a couple of weeks, all the primaries will have unfolded. And at the beginning of this election cycle, sort of the national media narrative was that the Democrats were going to have a tough time. But in their recent narrative, it's changed, and that is the Republican primary voters in too many states have voted for candidates that are too extreme and can't win. So they're now balancing it, suggesting that the Republicans may do fairly well, or it might be an even run on.
Well, the Trump-backed candidates in governor's races and Senate races are having big problems.
Right.
They're trailing in polls or in fundraising. Blake Masters in Arizona, J.D. Vance in Ohio is down 10, Mehmet Oz in Pennsylvania. You've got gubernatorial races in Pennsylvania, Tudor Dixon in Michigan, Darren Bailey in Illinois, who Representative Ives endorsed, if I remember right.
100%.
You know, I did an Illinois poll 2 weeks ago, and Bailey's down 20 to a governor who's almost underwater in the polls. Mm-hmm. So these Trump-backed candidates are showing that you're having a hard time converting moderate suburban women to wanting to be Republican voters. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a long slog to get them back.
Jeannie, suburban Republican women, that's you. So my question is, are you buying the narrative that it is suburban Republican women that are the biggest albatross around the party at the moment if it's trying to rally around Donald Trump?
Well, I would say that they tend to be much more moderate in the suburbs. That is true. There's no denying that. But, I mean, at the core of it, what do women care about, really? They care about their children and their future, and they care about security. And so if we were able to raise the funds and we had political consultants who ran campaigns that understood how to message correctly and directly to these voters, and we could do it as much as the Democrats do it in terms of repetition, and get our message through, we may have a fighting chance here. Because the environment is good.
What should they be saying?
They should say things like, parents matter. not your teacher unions, but parents matter. I mean, I think that's really a really important issue. I think it's something that resonates with everybody right now. They need the Biden's one to actually go ahead and investigate parents that were, you know, speaking up at school board meetings. This stuff needs to be articulated just like Glenn Youngkin did in Virginia for a win. I mean, he had a very conservative message. He had a pro parent message, pro-education message, educational choice, actually. And he won. He won on that. That is one of the most signature things that he won.
Arlen,
look, yeah.
Arlen Gould, you are a member of a school board. You've been a member of a school board for a long, long time. How do you feel that the Republican Party or conservative base within the party, how have they conducted themselves in debating with teachers and school boards, at least within your sphere of influence?
Well,
are they a pain in the butt, or are they important?
Haven't affected us particularly. I think the problem is that when they paint every school board with the same brush and with the same attitude and the same charges and the same tone, what happens is in good school districts where we're doing a good job, parents push back and say, we know we can vote out that school board if we want to, and they can. So the whole argument that we need to put parents back in control, they are in control in Illinois. They have a chance to vote out any school board every two years.
As a political operative who's managed campaigns,
yep.
Would you acknowledge that what happened in the Commonwealth of Virginia with Glenn Youngkin, that the narrative of that campaign is that the Republican Party or conservatives, they galvanized the parent vote, and because they were successful there, Republicans are trying to duplicate that around the country?
Well, yeah, but every state and every situation, every school board is different. So in that case, it resonated. But he also ran away from Donald Trump. So he ran away from the Trump attitude, messaging, and denigration of people. And that's in part why he won, not just the galvanizing of parents.
And most importantly, he ran away from social issues.
Yeah.
He made it an election about the economy,
right.
About jobs, about better schools, about more opportunities. And he did a great job not scaring away those moderate
right.
suburban women in Northern Virginia.
Yeah.
And they showed that Terry.
How do you feel about the way in which the Democrats, specifically within Illinois, Governor Pritzker, because, again, we're seeing his television commercials all over the TV. How do you feel about the way he has handled the abortion issue in scaring the hell out of women about abortion and what abortion is going to mean to them in the future? Is that fair, the way he's doing that?
It's interesting because in Illinois, there's no way you can make abortion more legal, essentially. And he's running around with the Democratic supermajority talking about how I'm going to preserve your rights.
Right.
When
they already got it.
But what Democrats are doing are utilizing this issue to push the base out. This isn't about appealing to moderates or appealing to center right. It's, you know, there was a recent poll in Illinois that showed 2/3 of voters are in the middle on abortion. They're either pro-life with exceptions or pro-choice with restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
What Governor Pritzker is doing is, and Democrats across the country are running to that 20% in their state that are fully all-out abortion to mobilize them and get them to the polls.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they're winning in a lot of these races, because they've
yes.
got their base fired up.
But the problem is you have political consultants who don't want to take this on. They don't want to discuss the extreme positions that people like Tony Evers and Bruce and J.B. Pritzker have. They don't want to discuss those. They say to run away from the social issues when, in fact, you could actually have this as a winning issue. The idea that you are not going to let a parent know that their 13-year-old daughter is going in for an abortion, which simply protects a sexual predator, and Republicans are afraid to talk about that, is a problem. That is a winning issue. 72% of even pro-choice Democrats agree that parents have a right to know. This is where I'm saying parents matter in everything, and the Republicans do not want to talk about this stuff to their detriment. But you know what? It is a winning issue. There is up in Wisconsin, they're running a thing that says, I'm pro-life, and I believe there should should be restrictions on abortion. I'm pro-choice, and I believe there should be restrictions on abortion. Guess who doesn't believe that? Tony Evers. And so those are winning issues if we had political consultants who would do the right thing on messaging.
When we come back, we're going to continue with the political consultants we have around the table this evening. We will continue this discussion on this issue in the next hour. Also in the next hour, we'll be talking about September 11th.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit veteranscrisisline.net for free 24/7 confidential support.
Going back to school as a working adult doesn't mean you have to sacrifice a high-quality education. Purdue University, a top 10 public university, took its innovative thinking to a new level when it created Purdue University Global for working adults. Discover innovative, practical ways to earn your degree online and advance your career. Purdue Global has already awarded more than 1 million credits for prior learning, which means you can save nearly half the cost of your bachelor's. See how close you are to finishing your degree at purdueglobal.edu. That's purdueglobal.edu.
Goodbye, bench press. Adios, squat rack. Fare thee well, kettlebell.
Hey, Kellen, need a spot?
No, Jake from State Farm. I'm just saying goodbye to my pricey gym membership.
What? Don't give up what you love. State Farm has options like insuring your home and ride with great rates on both.
Nice. Hey, can I buy you a protein shake or a granola bar? Or...
For surprisingly great rates, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Call or go to statefarm.com for a quote today.
At Jersey Mike's, you can elevate any sub by getting the juice. Red wine, vinegar, and an olive oil blend. It's how a Jersey Mike's sub gets its exquisite zing and how bites get boosted. The juice adds a certain something extra, an exclamation on top of the freshly sliced meats and toppings, the kind of exclamation you can eat. Order Jersey Mike's subs on our mobile app and get delivery right to your home or pick up from your nearest Jersey Mike's sub location. Jersey Mike's, be a sub above.
1 in 3 adults has prediabetes. 1 in 3. That means it could be you, your football buddy. Your football buddy. Or you, your best man. Your worst man. You, your dog walker. Your cat jogger. While 1 in 3 adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. That's doihaveprediabetes.org.
Wait, did they just say 1 in 3 adults has prediabetes? That's 33.33333% of adults. That means it could be me, my boss, or my boss's boss, or me, my favorite sister, or my other sister. That's 7 members of my 21-person romantic book club. Wait, the 1 in 3 could be me, my karaoke partner Carol, or my karaoke enemy Jeff. I'm going to take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Bruce Dumont back in hour number 2 of Beyond the Beltway. We're going to continue our discussion about Republican politics and also switch gears to talk about Queen Elizabeth a little bit later on in the hour, and also any reflections that people might have about 9/11. Jeannie Ives, I want to ask you a question because it goes back to what we discussed in the last hour, which is how the Democrats are using the abortion issue, at least based on the television, in sort of a very scare tactics. And they have described what Darren Bailey, and for those around the country, we introduced you to Darren Bailey on this program about 2 months ago. So you had a chance to hear his story up close and personal for an hour. But my question to you is, the TV commercials are offering a very one-sided opinion and definition of his position on abortion. Abortion is one of your key issues. You are an unofficial advisor to the campaign. What is his position on abortion?
Well, he was just on WIND radio the other day, and actually he avoided answering the question about abortion in terms of exceptions for rape and incest because he does not want to discuss it, from my opinion, you know, from what I can tell. And I am not an official advisor to that campaign, but I am, you know, but Okay. Do I kind of know who Darren Bailey is? Absolutely, 100%. I support him. He is a very pro-life. The reality is that even when you look at the Dobbs decision was based on a 15-week limit for abortion. That is actually where even two-thirds of Illinoisans, which is a very blue state, even that we agree, that the majority of Illinoisans agree that abortion should be limited to the first trimester. I mean, that's where most people are. That's where you can find a lot of commonality. Now, I'm pro-life. Darren's definitely pro-life. There's no doubt about that. But in a practical sense, where is this going with the legislature that's in place right now and the rules surrounding it? It's not going to an abolishment, even a heartbeat bill. I don't see that happening in the state of Illinois. So the Democrats, on the other hand, in Illinois, I mean, we are one of the most radical states for abortion. In fact, they are talking about using taxpayer money to support and supplement people coming in from out of state to get abortions in the state of Illinois. And there is thunderous applause over abortion by the Democrats here.
In this matter, you have a binary choice in November for who's going to be the next governor of Illinois.
Yes.
And every single commercial that Pritzker is putting out there and independent groups supporting Pritzker, they're hammering the issue of abortion. So I'm a little bit surprised and disappointed that the would-be governor does not understand the importance of articulating his own position if it includes rape and incest. That also, I think, is a very majoritarian position.
Sure is.
It is, absolutely.
And if he's unwilling in a radio interview to acknowledge his majoritarian opinion, I'm wondering where his political skills are.
Well, you know, a lot of this is the reason that you hear the Democrats talking about this is because they have the money to talk about it. Campaigns are expensive, and money means you can get your message out. Now, if the messaging were correct, the messaging that should be done in the state of Illinois is that the Democrats have made it very dangerous for women, even if they were to have an abortion. Abortion clinics are not largely inspected or regulated in this state. Right. If you die, they literally wrote into the law that if you die in abortion procedure, the coroner will not be called. I mean, that's what they wrote in. They wrote that 13-year-olds can go get an abortion now without any parent notification. That protects sexual predators. Those are the issues that almost everybody thinks should happen, and most people don't even understand that it is a complete lawlessness when it comes to this.
But to put that into a TV commercial, that's a complicated story,
right,
that you've just told to put into a 30-second
well,
spot.
Well, we did a 30-second spot on this. My whole organization, Breakthrough Ideas, we just put out a 30-second spot on it.
Good. But it still doesn't. If you're the voter deciding whether or not Darren Bailey is as J.B. Pritzker has defined him, it seems to me that he's not standing up for the fight.
Well, the issue
is this an issue that's important to you?
It's an issue that is important to me. I have a wife, I have daughters, I have granddaughters. But the issue, and I think the problem that the Republicans have, is the noise coming out of places like Tennessee and Florida and Texas in terms of how women are being treated in their general health concerns and being told to go home and get sicker before they can have an abortion, so overwhelms the message that Jeannie is talking about that nobody hears anything other than how women are being treated. And that's why you've got a state like Kansas voting enormously in favor of women's rights.
The reality is abortion is a gray issue for most people. Either you can be pro-life or pro-choice, but there's so much more to it than just that. I have a 9-month-old at home. And before I heard his heartbeat for the first time, I would have told you that I was pretty ambivalent to really don't care because it wasn't an issue that impacted me. I hear his heartbeat for the first time. You better believe I'm going to run through hell if I have to protect his life.
Sure.
And, you know, but there are so many different scenarios that we all don't understand or can't comprehend, whether it's the loss of a baby, whether it's a baby that can't be viable outside the womb.
Correct.
when it's born. There are so many.
Okay, that's personal to me. Quite frankly, that's personal to me, because my fifth child, at the 20-week ultrasound, we found out that he would not survive outside the womb. I carried him to term because it was not my decision to take his life. You rule out a miracle. There was no complications with the pregnancy. There is something that women have gone through for centuries. And if you allow the process, in my opinion, to play out the way nature should take it, there's no reason to have to abort just because upon birth the baby will die, which is exactly what happened with my son. So, I mean, to say that is a reason for abortion. We went from just now in this conversation talking about a possible rape and incest issue where most people agree,
yep,
to now going, you know, because the baby's going to die at birth, that you should be able to abort.
I what mean, I'm I just saying is that it's a gray area for
that.
Most people.
I reject
many
that.
People, at least. And while I can't imagine that pain, and I'm not trying to equate it to anything. My point is that each person views the different layers to this differently, and I can't be the judge of how someone feels on a situation.
Right. Well, the other part of it is it's complex. There are so many medical conditions that a doctor has to look at that why should a doctor feel threatened for doing their job to try to protect the life of the mother first?
Do you believe the 10-year-old?
I want to get back to the media and the people that make commercials who are trying to convince people. I mean, you know, the popular narrative is that because of Roe v. Wade, the overwhelming majority of American women in this country are up in arms, and they are just lining up getting ready to vote Democrat because they're so upset about it. And I'm just saying to myself, sort of asking, What percentage of the women in America, or what percentage of these Republican women that are upset with Donald Trump, what percentage of them are furious at the concept of abortion, furious at the possibility and the likelihood of Illinois, you know, being a cheerleader and Governor Pritzker being a cheerleader for abortion? I wonder how irate they really are, because I don't see it in television commercials. And that's where the power, I think, really comes.
Goodbye, bench press. Adios, squat rack. Fare thee well, kettlebell.
Hey, Kellen, need a spot?
No, Jake from State Farm. I'm just saying goodbye to my pricey gym membership.
What? Don't give up what you love. State Farm has options like insuring your home and ride with great rates on both.
Nice. Hey, can I buy you a protein shake or a granola bar?
For surprisingly great rates, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Call or go to statefarm.com for a quote today.
Going back to school as a working adult doesn't mean you have to sacrifice a high-quality education. Purdue University, a top 10 public university, took its innovative thinking to a new level when it created Purdue University Global for working adults. Discover innovative, practical ways to earn your degree online and advance your career. Purdue Global has already awarded more than 1 million credits for prior learning, which means you can save nearly half the cost of your bachelor's. See how close you are to finishing your degree at purdueglobal.edu. That's purdueglobal.edu.
Matthew.
Huh? Oh, sorry.
It's okay. I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you. And what you say really does matter to me.
I mean, let's be honest. No kid likes rules, but I get why we have them. I hear you, and I know it's because you care.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey, want a drink?
No, thanks, I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thanks, Mom, for never giving up and always being my biggest fan.
Thank you for letting me know what you expect, so I can try to meet your expectations.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
It's a bully, but we aren't afraid of a fight. It's elusive, but our focus never fades. It's deadly, but we were born to defeat cancer. You may not have heard of us, but our work has helped millions impacted by cancer. We are the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. We are leaders in advancing breakthroughs in immunotherapy, genomics, and personalized medicine. This research saves lives. After 65 years of fighting blood cancers, we've arrived at a game-changing belief. The cures for cancer are in our blood. The drugs and treatments we've developed for blood cancers have helped people affected by many different types of cancers. We are the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Beating cancer is in our blood. Learn more at lls.org.
We are back. Patrick Fingston, Jeannie Ives, and Arlen Gould join us tonight, and they're all in studio. The first time we've had three people in studio for a long time. We're trying something a little new, and we're also on TV, so we may do this again, folks. Thank you very much. That long-range planning for this, that's what happened. Right, Patrick?
It's our pleasure to be here.
The way we did it. September 11th, 21 years ago, I think most people who were alive remember where they were. I don't want to do a huge show on it because I want to really focus more on what lessons we have learned in the last 21 years, and we have a whole generation that doesn't even remember it now. Yeah. Arlen, you have a quick story you want to share as to how it affected you.
10 months before, I had the opportunity to take my family to New York, and we went through the lobby of the World Trade Center. We chose to go up to the top of the Empire, but we did not go to the top of the World Trade. Yeah. On the day, 9/11, I have a lot of breakfast meetings, and I was at a breakfast meeting. We were sitting at a table. There's a big TV set there, and you can see all of a sudden, you see there's a building and there's smoke coming out of it, and you didn't make too much of a thought about it until somebody said there's something really serious going on. So we walked over to the TV, and you could see the size of the hole, and we assumed it had to be an airplane at that point, and we hung around for a while as it continued to burn, and went back to our table, and then I could see another plane coming. And then I saw the second plane hit it live as I was sitting there in the restaurant. It was pretty powerful, pretty terrible to watch.
Wow.
Well, my memory is I was out of the country. I was vacationing in Sweden, and I was on an island, off an island. The island is Gotland Island. And I was off that island and just going around the countryside and coming back, waiting in the car, waiting for a ferry that was going to take me maybe 10 yards across the stream there, and had the radio on. And everything was in Swedish. Obviously, the music was playing. But again, when the voices came on, I could make out, it was in Swedish, they talked about New York, trade towers, Pennsylvania came up quite a bit, Pentagon, terrorism.
Yep.
Those are the only words that I really made out. And then I switched to another station, and those words were coming through again. So I'm saying, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
So finally, when I took the ferry across the lake there, got back to the hotel where I was going to stay that night. This was in Gotland. When I checked in, they said, where are you from? And I said, Chicago. And they said, we understand there was an attack on Sears Tower.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because there was rumors for a while that Sears Tower had been hit.
Yep.
And I said, no. And I said, well, then they pointed to the television set in the lobby, and you could see some of the video, the early video. But the early video that I saw, and again, this is, you know, whatever the difference in time was, it was not the planes going into the, it was, you know, it was a little bit of what happened at the Pentagon. And I did not, until I got into my room, I realized what had happened, because CNN was not there. This was like Sky News, which was the big European television.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that point on, I was locked in, and I realized that it was one of the first times in the history of this program I was going to be away for two consecutive weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have a substitute. There were two shows that were in the can. One show had already run, and I said, there's no way in the world I can run a canned show.
Right.
So I called up and eventually went over to Radio Sweden, which was their NPR, and introduced myself and asked if I could utilize a studio. And their studio was right next to the American Embassy.
Mm-hmm.
So I made the arrangement to do my program the following Sunday, which was like what, 3 or 4 days later. And then, like everyone else, I got some flowers and I put them on the floral display that had been set up outside the American Embassy. Yeah. And that night, when my friend and I, when we went out to dinner in this small restaurant tavern in Gotland, people, total strangers, came up, mm-hmm. and because they noticed that we were Americans,
yeah.
they came up and offered their condolences.
Yeah.
And it was something that I will never forget. Mm-hmm. But coming back, this was several days later when I finally came back to the United States and landed in Chicago, the airline pilot said, "Welcome back to the United States of America." And everyone in the plane, they applauded, and tears were coming sure. down everyone's face yeah. because of the experience. But it's 21 years later. As an American, I still feel an emptiness in my body, in my heart and soul, that I don't quite have the same appreciation or understanding of what it was like, because I've heard numerous stories from people such as yourself, Carol Marine, the great reporter, she was on the scene reporting at that point, her display of what happened, and then also just, you know, my employees at the Museum of Broadcast Communications yeah, yeah. talking about that they were sent home, and, you know, the hustle and bustle and the silence on the L's that night going home because everyone was so fearful. But, again, it's a collective experience of what it was like to be an American yeah. that I can't really understand or comprehend because I didn't experience it, but I experienced right. it from as a American citizen on foreign soil.
So an add-on, I was a teacher in those days. That was when I was mm-hmm. teaching public schools. And the next day, there was some kind of a scare, and they were sending us home early. And our students all escorted us. It was in the inner city.
Mm-hmm.
They all escorted the teachers to their cars to be sure everybody got away safely. Whoa. It was that kind of feeling
yeah.
about helping each other.
Yeah. 21 years later, Patrick, there's a whole generation mm-hmm. that couldn't comprehend the story I just told or even reading about it. And part of it, in my opinion, is that the news media, at least in recent years, has done a very poor job in playing the video of the planes and some of the devastation of what took place there. And I'm not talking about the people jumping out of the tower. I mean, I frankly have never seen that video. But again, I know it exists. So I'm wondering whether or not the collective media of the United States, at least the electronic media, are they doing a disservice to the American people and to a younger generation by not showing the devastating pictures that exist?
You know, it's a really interesting question. I think, you know, a college freshman this year was born in 2004. So it literally didn't happen, you know, right. in their lifetime.
Right.
I mean, they were born after the invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq. I mean, so the question is it being taught in schools, first of all, which I don't know the answer to. But two, yeah, clearly we're not doing enough in terms of remembrance of what happened and how we felt that day and the way we came together afterward. I think it's doing a disservice not only to those that are growing up that didn't understand it, but those of us that are forgetting about it.
Jeannie, what's your action or reflection? And also just answer to the question about whether or not we as a society are doing a proper job in reminding people what happened.
Well, I think, you know, it's very rare that America is attacked on her soil. I mean, it just
right.
doesn't happen, right? You know, during World War II, obviously you had Pearl Harbor, you had some Germans, you know, skulking off our coasts and everything like that. But really, to have an attack like this in modern history is just most people had never even experienced it. It's maybe only the military who actually conceive of it or think of it during their training. Like, I may actually have to defend myself, my teammates, everybody else, for the country. You know, very few people actually think that way. And very few people actually stand up and, you know, raise the right hand and swear an oath to defend the Constitution and the United States. And so I think that there's a total disconnect between service to the country that way and it ever being attacked. And I think that's a problem. One other comment, though, on that is, you know, I think it's remarkable that what we have also forgotten is that 20 years hence, now what's happened? The Taliban are back in charge of Afghanistan with $80 billion worth of our equipment because Joe Biden and the military leaders let it happen in a terrible way, the exit from Afghanistan. We are more vulnerable now with 2 million illegal immigrants coming across our border, with the Taliban in charge of Afghanistan again, with literally the lawlessness that happens on our streets every day. Public safety is a real issue. National security is a real issue. And I think it's something that we do not pay enough attention to.
But again, I hear you on, I agree on some of that, disagree on others. But to me, the media generally is about dynamic pictures and playing them over and over again, whether it's the Rodney King beating or mm-hmm. you know, riots, you know, in Chicago or wherever. But in this particular case, this is devastating video. And by the way, in my view, as I looked at, and I was looking at the media coverage, you know, 5-10 days later, this was a great day in the history of media, the way they covered mm-hmm. the story. I mean, this was a big, huge story, and most media covered it in a very responsible way, and yet they're not even reminding people of their responsibility in the wake of this horrendous tragedy. Right. And again, for the person born in 2004 or my grandchildren, they don't know from this. And again, I think part of it is it's like they don't want to rile up the American people and get them all exercised again and ticked off at at the Saudis or whoever or Al Qaeda. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly, we're going to talk about the Queen of England.
Protect her home and family in a disaster, Karen was willing to wade through water, mud, and insurance paperwork.
Yeah, I can do this.
You go, Karen! By simply understanding and updating what her insurance covers and doesn't cover now, she'll be better prepared no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
At Jersey Mike's, you can elevate any sub by getting the juice. Red wine, vinegar, and an olive oil blend. It's how a Jersey Mike's sub gets its exquisite zing and how bites get boosted. The juice adds a certain something extra. An exclamation on top of the freshly sliced meats and toppings. The kind of exclamation you can eat. Order Jersey Mike's subs on our mobile app and get delivery right to your home or pick up from your nearest Jersey Mike's sub location. Jersey Mike's, be a sub above.
If you talk, they will hear you.
We all want our kids to grow up safe and healthy. So we show them how. And we tell them with honest conversations that let them know what we expect. Not just one time, but every chance we get. That's especially important when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. Kids not only need to know the dangers and how to avoid them, they need to hear it often from you. And when it comes to pain medications, opioids, they need to know that they should never be taken without a prescription and never shared with friends or family. It's dangerous and illegal. So talk with your kids and guide them through the challenges of growing up safe and healthy. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
So talk, they hear you. You can do it if you try.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back. We continue with our broadcast this evening, and in the next half hour, we're going to be joined by John Kochelko. In fact, John joins us on the line now. John, are you there?
Yes, I am. It's good to be back again, Bruce.
It is good to have you with us, and for those around the country, let me mention that John has a doctoral study in British history at Loyola University. He has a bachelor and his thesis was on the British monarchy and the age of Victoria, and also he's have a lifelong interest in the United Kingdom and has done a lot of writing and reading on the subject. And so he was not able to be with us in studio tonight. But again, he has an expertise. And I want to begin, obviously, in the wake of the passing of Queen Elizabeth after 70 years on the throne in England. Obviously, it's been wall-to-wall coverage, so it's pretty hard to get away from the story. But explain to us, John, why you think so many Americans appear to be interested in the Queen of England.
Well, I think it derives from what we call the special relationship between the United States and the United Kingdom. The fact that we went through three world wars, you might say, in the 20th century, the First and Second World Wars and the Cold War. It goes back to the deep friendship between FDR and Winston Churchill, between Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher. But more than that, you know, it's axiomatic. People say that, you know, we share a common language, we share a common literature, we share a common devotion to the rule of law. We share a common history in many ways. We were, after all, colonies of Great Britain, and although that was broken in 1776, it wasn't long before the feelings of kinship were rekindled in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. Queen Victoria was extremely popular in America. Americans were well aware of Queen Victoria, so it goes back to that. Mm-hmm. And I think that all of this, and then when you add to that the 70-year reign of Queen Elizabeth, the many times that she visited the United States, I remember watching when she came to the United States and to Canada to dedicate the St. Lawrence Seaway mm-hmm. in 1959. I remember watching on television when she spoke and President Eisenhower spoke. It was covered on the old Today Show with Dave Garraway.
Well, she came to Chicago in 1959.
History. Yes.
Didn't she come to Chicago with Mayor Daley? I remember I remember a great picture of them at Buckingham Fountain.
Sure, that was all part of that trip when she came here for that dedication.
When did the issue of the monarchy, when did it start, why does it continue, and will it always continue?
Well, the monarchy, of course, goes back more than 1,000 years. The Queen and now King Charles can trace his ancestry back even before the Norman conquest, which we all know of 1066. Mm-hmm. Her ancestry even predates that. They're one of the oldest royal families on earth. It has had some difficult times along the way, but it remains, as you can see from the crowd, immensely popular today. And I am one of those who believe that it will go on as far into the future as anyone can see, and I hope beyond that as well.
I think
it is a valued institution.
John, where does its money come from? How did they get to be one of the richest families in the world?
Well, the simple answer to that is land. I mean, the landed aristocracy. Land was the foundation of wealth for, for most of history until the 19th century with the rise of industry. And of course, the nobility and the royal family were landowners. The landed aristocracy have come in on difficult times in the 20th century because of the taxes that were imposed largely by the Labor Party as a way of punishing the upper class. Mm-hmm. But the royal family were long exempt from those types of taxes. So the queen has land, but also investments. I mean, their money was invested wisely. So they have great wealth. Much of the functioning of the monarchy is self-funded by the money that is derived from their lands and investments and estates. The amount that comes from what they call the civil list is a much smaller factor today. That has been reduced and fewer people on that civil list.
Who manages their money, and is there some sort of a bar between the way their money is managed and the political decisions of Great Britain?
Oh, certainly. Certainly, because, for example, you may have heard that the Prince of Wales, you know, Prince William, has now become the Duke of Cornwall. It's a hereditary title that is attached to being the Prince of Wales. The Duchy of Cornwall is very wealthy, and Charles has managed that money and uses much of it for charitable purposes. Mm-hmm. Much of that money goes for charitable purposes. They have a staff which manages their private funds as distinct from the government money, and so there is a clear separation between the private wealth of the crown. For example, Balmoral, where Her Majesty died, is owned privately. It is different from Windsor Castle, which mm-hmm. is part of the crown, part of the state, which is part of the state property of the monarch. But Balmoral is privately owned, as is a place called Sandringham, where they always spend their Christmas time.
Mm-hmm. But again, there is someone in the family, and there's someone in the government that makes sure that the family money doesn't get commingled with the money of the government. Well, I mean, that's the way we would look at it in the United States. And I'm just saying, is there a similar thing that keeps those two funds separated?
Of course, because I mean, I don't know that has ever been an issue. I don't know there's ever been any question that there are clear separations between state activities and state functions and all of that, and then their private holdings and their private investments. They're clearly distinct and separate.
Is there any former colony once they have been let go or freed or given their independence by the royal family, is there any one of those entities that has become hostile towards either Great Britain or the family?
Well, of course, there's a Commonwealth that consists of many countries, more than 50 countries in the Commonwealth. Most of those do not acknowledge the monarch as being their monarch. There are, I believe, 14, including Great Britain, which recognize the monarch as their own monarch. In Canada, for example, the King Charles is the king of Canada. He is the king of Australia. He's the king of New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a number of others, many of them now islands in the Western Hemisphere, mm-hmm. some of which are now looking to go toward independence and separating from the monarchy and becoming republics. Whether there's been actual hostility, I mean, all these countries, particularly the many countries in the Commonwealth, they all pursue their own foreign policies, mm-hmm. which can be contrary to British foreign policy and contrary to particularly to Britain's position with NATO. But remember that the Commonwealth is no longer the British Commonwealth. I can remember when I was a kid, it was called the British Commonwealth of Nations. Now it's simply called the Commonwealth because it has this more global connotation. And there even was one country recently joined the Commonwealth, which had never been a colony. So it's even open to other countries joining mm-hmm. the Commonwealth. Even if they never had any connection with Great Britain and never were a colonial home.
And its relationship with the Church of England, because the king is the head of the Church of England, as was the late Queen, the head of the Church of England. What? Tell us about that relationship.
King Charles is, by parliamentary statute, the supreme head of the Church of England. So he is considered the temporal head of the Church, whereas, and of course, the Archbishop of Canterbury is the spiritual head of the Church of England. This, mm-hmm. this, as I think most Americans know, goes back to Henry VIII and his divorce
mm-hmm.
and his unwillingness to accept the Pope as the final authority on whether he could be divorced or not.
Mm-hmm.
So Charles, and even made reference to that in his speech on Friday, his speech to the nation that he assumed as his responsibilities. Both Charles and his mother were known to be very religious. They take their Christianity very seriously, as does the royal family in general. Even though, of course, you know, England has long been religiously diverse, but they do have an established church, and he is the head of it and takes that position very seriously.
What is your
title? The defender of the faith.
What is your reaction to his first address to the world, Princess Charles?
I thought it was magnificent. I thought it was an excellent speech. I thought he hit all the right notes. He honored his mother at the beginning. He honored his mother at the end. He had her portrait there beside him, which I suppose was to be expected. But I just thought it was an excellent speech. I couldn't find a thing wrong. He talked about the importance of preserving tradition while recognizing the coming of progress. And one of the problems I have with our media, of course, is that they never talk about the first half of that. They're only interested in change. They're constantly calling for change.
Yeah.
He recognized the importance of preserving tradition, the heritage, the history, and by extension, the pomp and circumstance that goes with the monarchy. I thought it was excellent.
John Kuchelko, we are out of time for this segment. I thank you very much for joining us on Beyond the Beltway this evening and sharing your lifelong interest and awareness of the Queen of England, Queen Elizabeth, and now King Charles III. Back shortly.
Great to be with you. Thank you. Thank you, Bruce.
You're welcome.
Today, millions of people all across America are building a life in recovery from addiction and mental illness, helping themselves
and helping each other, with friends, family, and community lending their strength and support.
Join the Voices for Recovery.
Together, we are stronger.
For 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral for mental and substance use disorders, for you or someone you know, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
At Jersey Mike's, you can elevate any sub by getting the juice. Red wine, vinegar, and an olive oil blend. It's how a Jersey Mike's sub gets its exquisite zing and how bites get boosted. The juice adds a certain something extra, an exclamation on top of the freshly sliced meats and toppings. The kind of exclamation you can eat. Order Jersey Mike's subs on our mobile app and get delivery right to your home or pick up from your nearest Jersey Mike's sub location. Jersey Mike's, be a sub above.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for kids, teens, or young adults. It's just not.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals and volatile organic compounds into your body.
And nicotine, the same highly addictive substance found in regular cigarettes.
Nicotine can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
Affecting learning, memory, attention, and impulse control, and priming the brain for other addictions.
Vaping products also come in kid-friendly flavors that can make them appealing to youth.
And many kids also use other drugs, like marijuana, in vaping devices.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media,
many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping, because when you talk, they hear you.
For more information, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Open. Bruce Dumont back, and our telephone number is 1-800-723-8289. We've got a short time left. If you want to join us, you better do it quickly. And during the break, Arlen Gould, you are a man of a million stories, and you have a connection to the royal family.
Yeah. So some years ago, my partner and I acquired a business called Cardini Foods, Cardini Salad Dressing, from Rosa Cardini, who was Caesar Cardini's daughter. Caesar Cardini is the man who invented the Caesar salad July 4th, 1924. He did that in Tijuana, Mexico, in a restaurant that he had, he was running out of food. He needed to do a belly stuffer to keep people happy.
Yeah.
So he created a dressing with what he had, which was romaine lettuce, a coddled egg, some garlic, etc. But no anchovies, Bruce. I know you want anchovies in there. No anchovies
salad.
Now, there was some Worcestershire sauce in it. In Worcestershire sauce, 0.1% is anchovy.
Okay.
And some chef along the way, we don't know who, Julia Childs wrote about this story a lot. It never was discovered as to what chef added actual anchovies to the Caesar salad.
Huh.
But the connection with the royals is that the Winstons, that part of the royal family, actually tasted the Caesar in Tijuana.
Now, what part of the family were they? The Winstons.
The Windsors.
You said the Windsors.
The Windsors.
My memory is
faded. Everybody knows the Windsor.
The Windsors,
family.
That's
the family.
Right. And so one of them, and I don't remember who it was in Tijuana drinking and partying, which is what people did then because you couldn't do it in the U.S. during the Depression.
A member of the royal family was partying in Tijuana?
Was down there, tasted the Caesar salad, and brought it back to the U.K., the recipe. But it never really took hold in the U.K. until we began to sell it in the U.K. in bottled fashion.
Your company?
Our company. And it became a very big dressing in the U.K.
But when they took they got the recipe from Mr. Caesar, right?
Right. So,
did they give him any money for it? Did they?
No.
He obviously knew who they were, right?
He knew who they were, but
he gave it to him, and he didn't ask for it.
They didn't do anything with it. It was only sold in a restaurant at that point. It wasn't a commercial product yet, so they didn't.
But they used it at the castle. I mean, if they had the recipe.
Well, they did, and later on, by the way, Queen Diana loved the Caesar. That was her favorite dressing as well. I can tell you that. I met her chef at one of the food shows in the U.K., and Diana, that was her favorite dressing. They used to buy the Caesar for her and serve
from it. From your company?
From our company in a store in the U.K. They would bought it back then.
No, you've not heard that story on any other radio, television coverage until right here tonight on Beyond the Beltway.
Right.
That's awesome.
Right.
Jeannie, you have a reflection you wanted to make.
Well, any time somebody of her age dies, it's just remarkable to think back at what she has seen in her lifetime, a total transformation of the world, quite frankly, from its industrial capacity to its communication technology to just the way that the world is designed, that the kingdoms and the empires that existed when she was born no longer exist. I think that, when we lose our sense of history and what can happen in just 100 years, well, 96 years for her, but really in that amount of time, I think that we all lose something if we don't reflect on that. And I think she should be known really as a Renaissance woman, mm-hmm. too. That's the other thing. She had so many interests that were outside of just being the monarch, from her Jersey cows to just, you know,
her sense
everything.
Of humor.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So
the new king, mm-hmm. the king may be on opposite sides of your politics because he's big in global warming. That's one of his big topics.
Well, I don't think that the new prime minister is, however, so I think that that's remarkable. And I think that they're getting their comeuppance right now with the way that they've gone along that realm. That's a whole nother show. Okay. Love to delve into that one. But I do think, you know, her horsemanship, you know, we don't appreciate that so much. I mean, she's amazing. She was able to do everything.
And, you know, she served 70 years is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And
will anybody ever do that again?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
And
will that record be
broken? You know, you talk about, you know, my memory. My memory is going back to when I was 8 years old, and this was in 1952. Whatever the coronation was, I think mm-hmm. it was 53. That was the first time that an event in Europe was filmed, flown back to the United States, and played on early morning television. I remember watching the coronation of Queen Elizabeth on my blonde Lion and Healy television set. I had an old square made by the Lion and Healy Company in Chicago. And obviously television was very new in our home, and it was very, very exciting. But again, that and the other thing that would be on early in the morning were the atomic bomb tests at Yucca Flats, Nevada. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But again, the coronation of the Queen was a huge story in the history of American television.
I was going to say it will be very interesting to see how the new king balances his political history with the job that has to be strictly apolitical.
Mm-hmm.
If he were political, he's made very, you know, liberal statements at times,
yes. mm-hmm.
and you have a conservative majority in parliament. So
right.
you could run into some really huge issues constitutionally over there if he gets off on some political tangents.
I think he's been warned. I think there's been discussions about that very point.
Surely.
Well, he alluded to that in his speech that he was not going to be terribly active.
Right.
But also, he is the president of 400 institutions, charitable institutions, which now will go over to William, who will take on that responsibility. But also was mentioned by John about, how the media is always looking for change in the way that the various marriages have been played, you know, on American television. But I would hope that the news media would give the Queen, and thus far I think they have, without getting into the titillating gossip involving Diana and obviously the recent marriages and the split within the family. I mean, frankly, if they choose to abdicate their responsibility to the family and want to run off to Malibu, so be it. But I don't need to hear about them anymore.
Great show. Thank you, Bruce. And I want to say that what we just did tonight is what America needs to do, talk to each other.
Without calling each other names. And we should mention that Arlen Gould and Jeannie Ives were literally about 12 inches from each other. And Patrick Finkston, thank you very much. Nice
pleasure
to have you back on the program. Our thanks to our
song again. Here's that song again.
For the 100th time today,
here's that song again.
It's gonna be stuck in your head all day.
Yay!
Here's that song again.
It will make you cray cray.
You love your kids enough to watch that TV show a bajillion times.
Yay!
Love them enough to make sure they're in the right car seat for their age and size. Show them you love them. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Going back to school as a working adult doesn't mean you have to sacrifice a high-quality education. Purdue University, a top 10 public university, took its innovative thinking to a new level when it created Purdue University Global for working adults. Discover innovative, practical ways to earn your degree online and advance your career. Purdue Global has already awarded more than 1 million credits for prior learning, which means you can save nearly half the cost of your bachelor's. See how close you are to finishing your degree at purdueglobal.edu. That's purdueglobal.edu.
Goodbye, bench press. Adios, squat rack. Fare thee well, kettlebell.
Hey, Kellen, need a spot?
No, Jake from State Farm. I'm just saying goodbye to my pricey gym membership.
What? Don't give up what you love. State Farm has options like insuring your home and ride with great rates on both.
Nice. Hey, can I buy you a protein shake or a granola bar? Or...
For surprisingly great rates, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Call or go to statefarm.com for a quote today.
At Jersey Mike's, you can elevate any sub by getting the juice. Red wine, vinegar, and an olive oil blend. It's how a Jersey Mike's sub gets its exquisite zing and how bites get boosted. The juice adds a certain something extra, an exclamation on top of the freshly sliced meats and toppings, the kind of exclamation you can eat. Order Jersey Mike's subs on our mobile app and get delivery right to your home or pick up from your nearest Jersey Mike's sub location. Jersey Mike's, be a sub above.
I'll be here to hear what's on your mind.
Kids want to share what's going on in their lives with the adults around them. Parents, grandparents, teachers, coaches, and more. They want to know you're listening, and they want to listen to you. They want your input and guidance, early and often, on all kinds of topics. When it comes to a serious subject like underage drinking, they want to know your expectations, as well as how and why, as a young person, they should avoid alcohol. How you talk about it will change as your child grows. But the important thing is to talk about it. Not just once for an hour when you think the time is right, but in 60 one-minute conversations and more that are part of your everyday talks. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. When you need me, I'll be by your side.